Good morning and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's program is a part of our Talk to Your Neighbor series, in which Alaska Public Media partners with local community groups to bring our listeners trusted voices and accurate information about the coronavirus pandemic. Today, we speak with community health workers whose mission is to lead their clients toward health care that they need. In 2022, that can still mean helping vaccine-hesitant clients to arrive at a personal decision to receive the COVID vaccine. Understanding and respecting resistance to health care, whether from disinformation, cultural bias, or indifference, is the mission our guests today navigate every day. They are known and respected in their communities, and sometimes they have to introduce difficult or contested information to their clients. How do they do it? What kind of success do they have? When is a gentle conversation more useful than a mandate? We'll find out today from our guests. By the way, we too have COVID constraints, so our guests are joining us via a Zoom link up rather than sitting here in the studio with me. We apologize for any hiccups in our process, but I think you'll find their stories and experiences valuable, very valuable in our current polarized climate. Now, we are taking calls from listeners today, and I'd like to invite people to listen to the show and call in and ask questions or make your own contribution. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we can check email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We have three guests with us today, and I'm going to just briefly introduce them, and then we'll talk a little bit about the organization they work for, and eventually we'll talk very specifically to the community health workers about how they found their path to this work, what their job is like, and they're going to tell us some stories about the kind of conversations they have with people in our community who are resistant to a vaccine or afraid of a vaccine or just don't think it's something that they have to worry about. They have those kind of conversations all the time. And I think that there's people in our community that have family members and friends that they might be having those conversations with or wanting to have that conversation with. So we'll pick up some guidelines and some expertise from listening to these community health workers who do it professionally. First, I'd just like to welcome them on. I have RJ Fontaine, who is the Health Promotions Coordinator for Alaska Primary Care Association. Welcome, RJ.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Very glad to have you on. Also, I have Charlie Crooms, who's a community health worker and a certified peer support specialist. Welcome, Charlie.
Hi, welcome.
Really glad to have you with us. And then we have Linda. And Linda, I'm going to invite you to say your last name because I won't do it justice. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Linda Tuli Maseli, and thank you for having us on the show.
So very glad to have you, Linda. And again, Linda is a community health worker and a certified peer support specialist. So I wanted to start with a little bit of background on Alaska Primary Care Association, because as I found out on your website, and I'm going to turn to RJ right here and then come to Charlie in a little bit, that, you know, tell me a little bit about why you're not a medical facility. You're not a place where people go get treatment. What is Alaska Primary Care Association?
We are a healthcare nonprofit. So what we do is support the operations and development of Alaska's 29 federally qualified health centers that are also known as community health centers. These community health centers provide comprehensive whole person care, which includes medical, dental, behavioral, pharmacy, and care coordination services. Our community health worker program specifically is Alaska's first certified recognized community health worker workforce, which is comprised of community members who have most often already been doing the work out in the community. You may know them as a patient care navigator or peer support. You may know them as a health coach or a front support staff in your medical office. These are individuals from within your community who have training and certification in things like mental health first aid, regular first aid, emergency medicine, viruses, how they work. There are so many different certifications that a community health worker can have. And that is what makes them so diverse and special for our community, is that these aren't folks from out of state coming to tell you, you know, what you should or should not do. These are folks from within your community who are advocating for you, acting as a bridge between you as a community member and the healthcare organization or provider that you trust mm-hmm. or don't trust, and have some questions. A community health worker is an amazing bridge, or as I like to say, a Swiss Army knife for community healthcare in that. So many different walks of life and skills and abilities. I'm sure Shar and Linda will be able to speak to that. But I've been nothing but impressed since coming here. And the more I learn about community health workers and the work they're already doing in Alaska, the more excited I am about what APCA is doing.
You know, it is very positive because we're sort of inundated with, you know, sort of conflict and polarization. And, you know, you could miss the work being done right on the ground. You know, that's mm-hmm. why I think this is a very good window into that work. Before I go to Shar, I looked at your history, and your organization started in 1995. So it's relatively, you know, it's been around a couple of decades. And that mm-hmm. it was clinic administrators and clinicians who wanted an organization that would advocate and work toward basically Alaskans getting the health care that they need. So apparently people in the field who thought there's gaps, we've got to find a way to support and fill in those gaps. And so this is what we're seeing with the community health workers.
Absolutely. I think that it's really exciting what APCA is doing. And I think that one of the biggest needs that Alaska has right now is simple awareness as to what resources are out there to combat understaffing, staffing shortages within our healthcare organizations. And of course, provider burnout, compassion fatigue, and COVID-19 fatigue that has been a challenge for all of our providers and healthcare professionals across the state. So for myself, I know prior to working with APCA, I was in a clinical setting, and the folks that I work with were incredibly compassionate, passionate individuals working tirelessly for Alaska as community members from Alaska. And something that I saw so often every day was folks who are passionate about Alaska, who want to help, but unfortunately not having the staff support or community support. Or the liaisons in place to do those sorts of communications makes it really challenging for folks to stay on or to feel that they're able to help. So for me, finding APCA and recognizing that they are already here doing the work and they want to supply Alaska's community health centers with qualified staff who are trained in having conversations around difficult subjects, such as an international pandemic, for example. Definitely gave me a lot of hope for the face of Alaskan healthcare and our future.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Shar, let's go to you. You said that before the show we were talking, and you had a couple of remarks to make about Alaska Primary Care Association. So tell us what you're thinking about there.
Absolutely. Alaska Primary Care Association supports the operations and development of over 29 federally qualified health centers, FQHCs, also known as community health centers. The health centers provide comprehensive whole person care, which includes medical, dental, behavioral, pharmacy, and care coordinator services. Due to the increasing needs spurred on by the increasing spread of COVID-19 across Alaska, APCA began qualifying and employing community health workers in October of 2021. Through education and practical knowledge gain in APCA's PATH Academy, that's pre-apprenticeship training in healthcare, CHWs make a direct contribution to their communities by being the boots on the ground, searching out those who are most underserved and in need of assistance. CHWs provide client assistance through case management, referrals to necessary services such as food banks, housing assistance, healthcare, and very much more.
Okay, thank you. That's a good addition and reiterates a little bit of what RJ said. And I think as people join our program, you know, reminding them, you know, who's on and what we're talking about is really, really helpful. So I'm just going to say our guests today are community health workers with the Alaska Primary Care Association, and we're going to learn how they have kind of fill the gap between the sort of traditional medical community and the community being served. There's gaps in understanding. There's gaps in trust. And community health workers are sort of on the front lines to help individuals navigate. And of course, with a global pandemic, it was very crucial that people have someone to turn to. So it's interesting to know your cohort is as young as it is, October 2021. So that's kind of exciting to be on the foreground of this new movement. And I don't know how large you're going to go. RJ mentioned another cohort is beginning. Do you have a goal for how many community health workers you envision in, say, the next 5 years? Shar, you're shaking your head. You don't know, or you don't have a.
We're looking for 75 over the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and then after that, the sky's the limit.
And Linda, did you have anything to add there?
No, Shar answered it perfectly.
So you're in a growth mode, and that's something that our listeners should be aware of, too. Not only what the role is, but that there's opportunities here for people who maybe are thinking, you know, I care about my community. I'm in a community that has people who aren't getting the services they need. For various reasons, maybe they don't think they need them, even though there's maybe medical screenings that they should be having or something like that, or they distrust the medical community. There's been many stories historically of bad situations, bad research, you know, that people could look to and say, "Boy, I just don't trust that." And then there's the whole idea of misinformation and disinformation that's circulating, and the whole social media opportunity to share information you don't even know if it's accurate. It's kind of, maybe it's emotional, maybe it's it hits a note in your nerves, in your core about, yeah, that I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't trust that. And then people share it, and it isn't necessarily based in any reality. So that's another issue that we're going to confront. Well, let me just introduce. Well, first, let me just say, if people are interested in joining this conversation, I know it's emerging as we talk, but we welcome your questions for the community health workers or about the program. In Anchorage, it's 550-8433, and statewide, it's 888-353-5752. And I know your ambitions are to go statewide. Apparently, your cohorts now are deployed mostly in South Central, but your ambitions are really to reach into the rural communities. So there may be folks outside of Anchorage that could really benefit from getting the details from this show. And we'll check our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, let me start with Charlie. Charlie, what brought you to this field? Why did you want to be a community health worker? And what was your background before you got there?
Well, thank you. My background, I started out right after my military service in 2001 as an EMT. And then went up the ladder from there, continued my education, and became a paramedic, and had a pretty great career over 10 years. And intermittently in between that, working on the ambulance, working the 24 hours on, 48 hours off, gave me a lot of time to do other things. So I worked inpatient care with traumatic brain injuries, and I also worked emergency room care. What brought me to community health work was actually by happenstance. I was in the Palmer DMV and just happened to see a flyer for PATH Academy. And I thought, you know, what the heck? Let's go ahead and give this number a call. And it spurred this wonderful career opportunity that I have now.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about the PATH Academy? How long does it take? Do you apply, or, you know, is there a process of acceptance into the academy?
Yeah, you do apply for the PATH Academy. And it is, oh, help me out. How many weeks? It's what, 8 weeks?
RJ, is it 8 weeks?
We have a series of PATH trainings, and we also have ongoing educational series as part of our APCA programming. So within the CHW cohort, it is 3 weeks within PATH Academy specific. However, we have ongoing resource spotlights, our ECHO series we can touch on later, mm-hmm. and trainings for both our community health workers in training as well as our host sites. So community health centers who partner with us, who have a community health worker apprentice or a CHW employed, get ongoing training resources as well.
You know, I think it's interesting that Shar and RJ both were in the medical field and were drawn to this new approach, sort of maybe witnessing the gap between the traditional medical field and the people that need the services, that and trying to help step into that breach and fill that gap. Would you say that's accurate, Shar?
Absolutely, I would, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With all your medical background, did you sort of, you know, see patients who weren't really clicking with what they needed to do, or, you know, they might not say anything negative to a doctor or a nurse, but later you learned that they didn't get it, or they didn't understand it, or they don't have the resources to do what this person is recommending. Did you see that in real life when you were working in as an EMT?
I did. Many times I spent doing my patient education, going over their discharge paperwork or their diagnoses paperwork with them to make sure that they understood exactly what was going on. Mm-hmm. And as an ER tech, I had a lot of experiences with AIDS patients. That was the big epidemic at the time. Mm-hmm. And just sitting and talking with them and seeing that they were kind of afraid to ask the doctor questions, and they didn't really understand what the nurse told them. But when I was in the room giving them their care, spending that time with them, they would ask me, and I would be able to, from my knowledge within my scope, explain to them what was going on. And that just absolutely ignited that empathetic fire in me. Mm-hmm. Now I get to continue as a CHW.
Mm-hmm. And Linda, let's hear a little bit from you. tell us a little bit about you. Are you a lifelong Alaskan, or when did you move here? And what brought you to community health work?
So I moved up here in the winter of 98, and I've been here ever since. I moved away twice, but Alaska keeps calling me back, so I've been back, mm-hmm. and Alaska is home for me. So what brought me to community health work was I was actually referred by a friend to this position only because they know my temperament and the type of person that I am and what I am passionate about. I'm passionate about in working, helping my Polynesian community in all aspects of life, and they just thought that this position would be perfect for me. So when I actually did go through the apprenticeship program, or at least the first parts of it, I really felt that this was a great fit for me, only because I felt that I could be a representative of my Polynesian community and kind of just give back to that community, which I think is often overlooked or underserved and underrepresented.
Mm-hmm. And you told us before the show that you actually did contact COVID yourself, you early on were, you know, not sure about whether you needed a vaccine or whatever. Could you tell us a little bit about what that experience was like?
Yes. So I definitely don't recommend COVID. I know it's not something that you have control over, but I did contract COVID at the tail end of 2020. So kind of the early onsets of the COVID pandemic. But
That was prior to vaccination.
Sorry, go ahead.
Was that prior to vaccinations being available, or were you yourself a little hesitant to get a vaccine?
I know the vaccines were available at the time, but I was one of the ones that was just kind of like, ah, I'll just see how it goes. You know, it wasn't really a top priority for me at that point. I was just like, I'll just wait it out and see how it goes. And if I want it, I'll get it. But then after contracting COVID, I'm like, no, this is not it. I need protection, not only for myself, but for my family. I live in a multi-generational household, and and it's super, their health is super important to me. So as a family, we made a decision to get the vaccine as a whole. And I've speaking from personal experience, I think we're all the better for it.
And tell us about your multi-generational household. Do you have grandparents and little kids in the household? Who's living there?
I have grandparents, parents, and children younger than me. So it's just a host. It's just a mix, a variety of different people. And like I said, we made a decision as a family to get vaccinated to protect ourselves and those around us.
And was that a tough decision for your family to reach? Were some people ready to go right away and others took more time to think about it?
So the crazy thing is, when I contracted COVID, our entire household contracted COVID. So as a collective, we just want to do as much as we can to protect ourselves and those around us. So it wasn't really hard. We felt that it was a need that needed to be filled at that time, like I said, for protection. So it was a pretty much easy decision for us to get vaccinated. Contracting COVID and getting COVID kind of just gave us that boost of like, hey, like this is the next thing that we need to do to protect ourselves.
Right.
So we did.
Sort of a wake up call, you know, like it's a real thing. And now I know what it is. And now I'm going to do what I can to keep it from spreading to other people. So, well, listen, we have to take a little tiny break here. So we'll return in a moment to hear more from these community health workers with the Alaska Primary Care Association. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today, we're speaking with community health workers with the Alaska Primary Care Association. They're very focused on helping underserved people in our South Central community to get the health care that they need. And in this day and age, that includes getting a COVID vaccine or a COVID booster. So they are often talking with folks who have hesitation or concerns or just it hasn't been a top priority for them. And actually, I'd like to invite our listeners, if you have a story about your own COVID experience or your own coming to terms with getting a vaccine, we'd love to hear it. I think there's a lot of people that have walked that walk. And, you know, if you resisted and still have not gotten vaccinated, maybe you can tell us why. We could even challenge our community health workers to talk to you and see if they can demonstrate their skills in being respectful, but also providing information. So we'd love to hear your stories one way or the other. So 550-8433, statewide 1-888-353-5752. And we'll check our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So anyway, I wanted in this segment to really hear your stories, and that might prompt some of our listeners to tell their stories, too. I think I'll start with you, Shar. Before the program, we talked about how it's a constant part of your job to see the gaps in healthcare and in terms of COVID, maybe a vaccine that someone hasn't yet decided to do it. Give us some examples of success and help us understand when it isn't going well, how you stay focused and you stay present. So first of all, give us a success story. We'd love to hear one.
Absolutely. I had a client, or have a client, 31-year-old woman. She was extremely hesitant to get her vaccine because of the family situation that she was living in. She lives with her in-laws who are extremely anti-vaccine for political reasons. They feel that that COVID-19 is simply a political construct. And so she was afraid to get her vaccination because of that. She reached out to me and we began our conversations. Several weeks later, maybe 2-3 weeks later, I got great news that she snuck out and got her first vaccination, but was afraid that the family might find out about it. So we continued our conversations. I continued to support her in whatever way she needed and to encourage her to have courage in expressing her needs and wants to be vaccinated. And so then when it became time for her to get her second vaccine, she did so. She told the family, "I've already had my first, and now I'm going to get my second." And she did. And then so forth, she got her booster shot. And she said she did so to protect the health of her young child while in that house. Now, did that cause her some animosity within the household? Yes, it did. But she was able to stand up for herself and to establish her personal want and need to be vaccinated. And I consider that a great accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know whether any other family members have subsequently decided to get vaccinated, or is she remaining sort of the one that did get the vaccine?
We're working on her partner to get vaccinated, but so far she remains the only one.
Let's go to you, Linda. What sort of, do you have a success story to tell about working with someone who was hesitant and then sort of by talking to you found the information they needed?
I do. My success story has to deal with two people, actually. It's they're among the younger generation. I have a 17 and an 18-year-old, male and female. And I had gone to pick them up after school and we were out to run errands and whatnot. But they had begun the conversation of vaccines. And they were hesitant at first only because they deal with a lot of mis and disinformation that they get via social media. And not only that, by word of mouth, they're like, "Well, my friends have parents or whoever have passed away due to COVID." And I feel that dealing with that certain situation, that facts always are the best way to go. So I guided them to the CDC website, which is a beautiful resource that has many different areas where you can view if you have any questions in regards to vaccines, cases, numbers. The CDC website is a great and wonderful resource that you can go to. And I was actually able to take the boy said that he was afraid of needles. And I get it. A lot of us don't like needles. But I told him it was just a quick pinch. And I was actually able to take the both of them to get their first vaccine. So, and then in hopes that they would kind of spread the word to their friends and kind of tell them, like, "Hey, it's not as bad as everyone makes it out to be. Vaccines are super important, and that's what we advocate for here."
Mm-hmm. Did they have to get parental permission or anything like that in that situation since they were teens?
The 17-year-old did, but the 18-year-old was old enough, so the 18-year-old was able to go for herself. But the 17, yes, they did get parental permission.
And was that a difficult thing to obtain for that teen? Were the parents willing, or was there a lot of conversation that had to go on there?
The parents were willing. The parents were vaccinated. They had tried to talk this young gentleman into getting the vaccine, but it wasn't working on their end. But they felt that coming from someone like me, that it would be more effective. So in that case, I didn't kind of run into much resistance. The parents were all for it.
Oh, that's great. That's interesting. Now, when it isn't going well, I'm going to go back to you, Shar, and then I'll return to you, Linda. When it isn't going well, how do you handle that? I mean, you can't apply pressure. You can't lose your temper. You can't. You also can't seem to be, telling somebody what to do. I mean, the whole, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, but the kind of interviewing techniques that you use are really not about you telling somebody something, but about them arriving at that decision on their own. So help me understand, Shar, when it's not going well, what strategies do you use?
The first thing when it's not going well is don't take it personally. They're not taking you. They're not rejecting you. It's the information that they don't that they don't want at that time, that they don't want to hear. So when it's not going well in that situation, then take a pause and maybe find out why. Why don't they, what's going on in their lives that they don't want to hear that at this time? Perhaps if you can figure that out, you can figure out the barrier to getting them to accept the information. And to use aspects of motivational interviewing. Ask them open-ended questions so that they can expound on their own thoughts. And through that, you can find out a lot of information. What's driving them to reject the vaccine at this time?
Mm. You know, I'm interested whether you are the kinds of things that people cite for why they don't want to deal with a COVID vaccination. What are the kinds of reasons you hear? And I'll go to Shar and I'll go to Linda again after that.
A lot of what I hear when I'm out doing community outreach is the political aspect of it. People reject it simply because they feel that it's a governmental construct. It's something to do with either a Republican or Democrat. And there are some people that just don't feel that the vaccine is effective. And that's through misinformation that they believe that the vaccine will prevent them from getting COVID-19. When in fact, it won't prevent you in all cases from getting COVID-19, but it will keep the symptoms. It will keep the severity of the infection to a low degree.
Mm-hmm. And Linda, how about you? Let's talk a little about when it's not going well. And I guess, are you primarily dealing with the South Pacific community, Pacific Islanders? Are you dealing with all kinds of folks?
I'm dealing with all kinds of folks, but I do get a lot of resistance from the Polynesian community. And I know due to a prior conversation that we had, the Polynesian community, they're of the mindset to tough it out. They'd rather tough it out than to seek medical care and to seek any help or actually engage in utilizing any resources that are available or presented to them. A lot of the resistance has come from the Polynesian community, just deal with that aspect. And they just don't want to be told what to do. I mean, many of us don't want to be told what to do, but that's just their main thing. They're like, I know what's best for me and I don't want to be told what to do.
So Linda, staying with you, when you meet that mindset, what do you say? Do you just kind of let it ride and come back another day? Or do you start with your facts? When you meet that mindset, what's your approach?
I start with my facts. A lot of it tends to do with translation issues, communication, like Shar had mentioned before. A lot of the jargon that's used in the health and medical field is not something that can be easily translated into a particular language. So we have to kind of translate it into words or I guess scenarios that they could easily understand.
Mm-hmm. Right. So Are you saying that, I guess I'm thinking, Linda, in terms of misinformation, you talked about the teens really being influenced by social media and misinformation. Is that pretty common with clients who are resisting, or can it, within the Pacific Island community, could be another source of opinion about, for example, from leaders in the community? I mean, are they of split mind about getting a vaccine? Are there some leaders that are in favor of it and some leaders that are not? And how does that play out for the community?
Definitely. I know there are plenty of other, companies that do advocate for the vaccine. There are plenty of other leaders that are all in favor for it. And I think that's something that they're trying to spread throughout our community. There tend to be much people in the elderly population that are hesitant in getting the vaccine. But I know that there are plenty of other leaders in our, specifically in the Polynesian community, that are advocating for the vaccines and the importance of getting a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. So it's maybe shifting. Would you say there's more hesitation in the older community than in the younger community within your Pacific Island community?
I would say that there is, tad more resistance in the elderly community, only because I believe that the younger generation, they're more easily influenced. And once they get the resources and the information that they need, like Shar had previously mentioned, that they're able to make a more informed decisions for themselves. But the elderly population, they're just kind of set. There's no wiggle room. They won't budge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'm going to say to our listeners, if you fall on this spectrum somewhere where, you know, you either you've read things that made you think you shouldn't get a vaccine, or what's interesting is the politicization of healthcare. Where, as you were saying, Shar, Republican Democrat sort of thing. Just trying to remove that and get to the facts. I'm going to go back to you, Shar. Give me another scenario, other scenarios that you've dealt with, even if they haven't worked out well yet, are there people who are moving closer and you can tell they're moving closer, and how do you help them with that?
One of the toughest cases I had was myself. I
really?
When the pandemic was first announced in March of 2020, the retail store that I was working in completely shut down. All of us got laid off, and I went into hibernation. I remained so for pretty much 2 years. The better part of 2 years, because I was afraid of going out. I watched the news every day and see the numbers rising and see the cases, the people on ventilators, and I didn't want any part of it. And then when they started having the vaccines available, and I found that I was not the first, but of the first wave that qualified for them, I was still afraid to go out to get them, because that meant I had to go out in public and I had to be inside with the people that potentially had COVID. And so I hesitated for quite some time because I was afraid to go out. But finally I broke through, and being a veteran, I was able to go to the VA. And they had an outdoor vaccination event. And that made me feel comfortable enough to go get my first vaccine. And then after that, I went on to get my second and then my booster. I was extremely hesitant because I was just afraid of the crowds. I was afraid of the people. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, I still carry some of that with me. But I feel more confident now that I'm more educated about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Linda? Any other scenarios you want to share with us about some of your your clients and where they are on the path to getting vaccinated?
Yeah, definitely. So I had this scenario with an elderly woman. Like I previously mentioned, the elderly population tends to be a bit stubborn, but that's okay. And so I found that in even after providing facts and providing resources, she was just still, she's like, no. She's like, flat out, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to get it. And so at this point, I'm not trying to force anything down her throat. I'm trying to be consistent with my efforts, with my information. She still has not agreed to get it yet, but I feel like there's a break coming somewhere down the road. So I'm just going to continue doing what I do best and just being empathetic and listening to her and her situation, just providing her with what I can do.
And Shar, you know, this idea that healthcare has been politicized, how do you react to that? Do you feel frustrated by it? Does it give you a point of conversation with your clients? Do you point out that this doesn't have to be politicized?
Yes, it does frustrate me, but that's something that I have to work very hard not to let come into my conversation. And it does provide an open door to have those difficult conversations with people. Gives me an opportunity to respectfully, actively listen to their point of view, non-judgmentally, and then to react just factually, not with any opinion, not with any of my own thoughts, but just factually from the scientifically proven results.
Do you find people presenting their own facts to you?
Like I do.
And, you know, my facts versus your facts. How do you handle that?
Again, I handle it non-judgmentally. You don't want to get into what is known as the writing reflex. You don't want to continually tell somebody, well, your facts are wrong and this is what's right, because that's just going to turn them off. And then you won't be able to reach anybody. But I respectfully listen to what they have to say and then simply counter with, okay, can I tell you what I've researched and what I know from that? Mm-hmm. And then I simply let them go and take that information and make their own decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to have to take another tiny break here. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We'll be back with our community health workers in just a moment.
Listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And just to remind our listeners, our guests are Charlie Crooms and Linda T., who are community health workers and certified peer support specialists, and also RJ Fontaine, who is the health promotions coordinator at Alaska Primary Care Association. And, you know, we've really been trying to delve into strategies and skills that can bring a difficult conversation and change, make change possible for people who are stuck in a spot, either afraid of a vaccine or they've been given some information that makes them feel that it would be better if they waited, you know, see what happens, all kinds of reasons people have. And so in this last segment, I would really, first of all, welcome any listeners who feel that way or have been caught in that situation to share their story with us at 550-8433. Or statewide 1-888-353-5752. But now I would really like to give our listeners some feel for what this kind of interviewing, motivational interviewing, you know, what it relies on, what its techniques are, because it seems to be one of the primary reasons that, or one of the primary skills that community health workers have as this bridge between their own community and the medical community. And I guess I'm just going to start with Linda here. You know, what did you learn about motivational interviewing? What are the key skills in your mind that you use when you're using that technique?
One of the things that really stuck out to me about motivational interviewing is just to listen. That's the simplest thing you can do, is just to listen. Many people, when they try and tell their stories, they've been given facts, they've been given all this loads of information, but they haven't really been given the opportunity to speak about it or to speak about their personal circumstances that they have. So one thing that really sticks out to me about motivational interviewing, is just to sit there and to listen, just to take a couple minutes and listen to, really, really listen to what they have to say.
And do you come back from that with, a response, or do you just, it's really just to let them talk it out?
At the beginning, it's really just let them talk out. Another aspect of motivational interviewing is to ask open-ended questions, kind of get a conversation going, because when you ask a question that has a yes or no answer, the question is just moot at that point. But if you ask an open-ended question and it gives them a chance to expand, you extract more information that way. So that way you can kind of come back around and saying, well, this is really what they were trying to say to you.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Char? What sticks out for you with motivational interviewing and the techniques you've learned?
I think Linda said it very, very well. The main part of motivational interviewing is closed mouth, open ears. It's not in what I have to say or in my ability to teach or anything like that. It's my ability to hear what the client is saying and be able to react to that. And to, like Linda was saying, ask the open-ended questions and then sit back and listen, not asking specific yes or no questions, because then, you'll get a specific yes or no answer, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask those open-ended questions and then you rephrase that, and then you say, okay, so what I'm hearing you saying is, that shows the client that you're really taking in what they're saying, and you are actually taking an interest in them. And then it spurs them to open up even more. And then that relationship is able to build, which is the entire, in a nutshell, what a CHW is about. It's about building and maintaining relationships with our community,
mm-hmm.
and being able to be there for them in their time of need, wherever they are at, mm-hmm. not where we want them to be.
I've got a question about success rates. Have you been keeping data on how you're doing, and how do you manage that? And I don't know whether RJ has the answer or Char has the answer. How do you know if you're winning the war, so to speak? Who wants to answer?
So,
RJ?
Yeah, I would love to speak to that a little bit. All of our community health workers keep daily records and reports of the work that they do out in the community. They collect their own data and contribute it. And we have an excellent team of folks here who help to distill and analyze that data for the purpose of not just our funding through the Department of Labor and Center for Disease Control, but to ensure that we are hitting the mark and that we are communicating with and reaching out to community members. At this time, I don't have an official report to share with you, only because there is new data developing currently, and I don't want to give you any outdated numbers. However, building off the points that Char and Linda made, a lot of us here at APCA believe that success is not necessarily convincing someone to do something they don't want to do. Success is not convincing someone to get the vaccine, even if they don't want it. Success is an open door. We have done our job when the door stays open. Whether or not an individual agrees with us in that first conversation that a vaccine would be the best way to go from pandemic to endemic stage, what we really value is ensuring that community needs are being met, and if not, that they are being heard, and us as community health workers want to amplify your voices out in the community just as much as we want to connect you with the facts and the science behind certain developments as we move forward into year three of this pandemic. Mm-hmm. So motivational interviewing is a wonderful way that, as Char said, closed mouth, open ears. A lot of us in healthcare may feel frustrated. We may feel exhausted by the ongoing dialogue and arguments surrounding the science and the politicization of healthcare at this moment in time. But being a listener and keeping the door open and recognizing that being misinformed does not make someone less intelligent. Being misinformed or having misinformation to bring to the table and ask questions about does not mean that you're less educated. It does not mean that you're less intelligent. And it does not mean that you are 100% wrong. What it does mean is that there's a breakdown in trust and communication. And so opening that door and ensuring that everyone feels safe to share what's important to them, and we can connect on those shared values of I want myself and my family to be safe first and foremost. I think that's how we open the door and ensure that our communities feel empowered in this pandemic or any other future crisis that our state is faced with. And I think that CHWs, our community health workers, are a wonderful bridge for that.
Mm, that's helpful to think about it, meaning that success can mean you're still talking, even if you're on different sides of the argument, you're still able the door is still open. And that means that there's still the opportunity for change. By the way, I want to mention that on our website, alaskapublic.org/hometown, we have a number of good links that were provided both by Alaska Primary Care Association and Charlie. That they recommended. And one of them is on motivational interviewing. So it gives you the kind of boiled down points of the training that these community health workers have received. And it's very, you know, takes patience, right? I mean, that's the thing that stands out for me. It's not about winning the argument today. It's about hearing somebody and really, really listening to what they have to say. And it's interesting to me, Char, that you said, don't take it personally. They're not rejecting you. And that can be really hard to do in a relationship. You sort of feel like, but it's me. You should trust me. Right? And sometimes that's not the right attitude. So I would refer you to our website for that motivational interviewing details. There was another really good one, which was the kind of questions people raise, like, an example would be, I'd just like to wait a little while and see how the vaccines are going. I don't want to rush in, you know, and different ways to respond empathetically to that, to, I guess, affirm and respect that as a position that someone can reasonably take. So I just think, you know, we could all benefit from thinking about these conversations we have with people we disagree with and maybe taking some of those techniques with us, the non-judgmental, the, you know, open ears, closed mouth idea. Maybe if we listen more to each other, we would be talking, we wouldn't be so polarized. So at any rate, yes.
I'm so sorry. We had over 90 individuals vaccinated at an event in February. This is a great example of a time in which we had individuals who might not have been vaccinated prior, who have agreed as a result of the communication strategies and just having the resources available for underserved and underinsured Alaskans. For each of those 90 individuals, for each of them, there's a family, there is a community group, there are possibly online communities. There are so many individuals that each person is connected to. And by each conversation that you have with a community health worker that you trust or a healthcare professional that you trust, you are equipped with the information that you need to be an effective community member in Alaska. Because as we've learned from the pandemic, it's not the federal government coming through and saying we need to do this that really gets Alaskans involved. It's our own community talking to each other and listening to each other and putting each other's needs first. So we have another event coming up on April 30th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Mountain View Library in Anchorage in honor of Children's Day. We're going to be focusing on all pediatric vaccines, not just COVID-19, but we want to expose health and wellness education to our Alaskan youth by way of a fun community event. So there will be raffles, there will be other social service organizations and community resources available. And of course, you can find us APCA on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at APCACHWs. That's APCACHWs. And we're happy to connect on social media, answer any questions you may have in regards to COVID-19 vaccines and community health.
Go ahead. RJ, this is for you just because I'm thinking about people perhaps are looking at this as a job opportunity. We're, you know, and the PATH Academy and the different certifications. I know that our two guests today are peer support specialists. There's other certifications that people can get, that a community health worker can get.
Yes, absolutely. So we offer a wide array of certifications and trainings that are healthcare related. We have dental assisting has recently been approved as one of our areas of study and pursuing healthcare careers. Behavioral health is also a big area of growth to combat the understaffing and shortages of qualified individuals available to help on a full-time basis. But everything from first aid, CPR, bloodborne pathogens. We have certified nursing assistants who are already trained who have joined our cohort. We have individuals who are peer leader navigators who are trained in chronic disease self-management, quality improvement, obesity and depression, integrated care workflow. There are so many different aspects of the healthcare need in Alaska that are needing to be addressed that our diverse cohort of community health workers is trained to address, and they bring their own unique backgrounds and experiences with them. So myself as an individual from Wasilla, I feel very deep connection with my community there because I grew up within it, and I understand folks I talk to, where they may be coming from based on certain communities that I grew up as a part of. Linda, for example, she brought up the wonderful examples of working within her own community and how her family made decisions as a group. For each individual that we connect with, either a career in healthcare or a host site at a community health center that is already doing the work where they can learn within, or a connection between a community member and a community health worker, all of those are bridges. So that's what APCA does, is we want to connect the help with where help is most needed, and those who are in need of help and information, making that the most readily accessible resource.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just have, about 30 seconds left or even less. Shar, what would you like our listeners to remember from today's conversation?
Absolutely. What I would like the listeners to remember from today is that the vaccinations and boosters are the number one way that we are going to go from the pandemic to the endemic stage. Mitigating this disease through medicine and science is the way we're going to beat it.
And I wanted to go to you, Linda, but I can hear the music is already playing and we ran out of time. It sometimes happens. But a huge thank you to Charlie Crooms and Linda T. and RJ Fontaine, who spoke to us today about community health work. And, of course, our listeners. Hometown Alaska will be back next week with another program of wide community interest. Please join us. You can find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Tobin Shelby is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.